Heard about Anchor? It is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your own phone or computer. Anchor will also distribute your podcast so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more podcast platforms. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started today.
I don't know if the audience remembers this, but on Thursday night, I recorded Week 9 with Matt Beast, and we talked mainly about New Orleans-Tampa. We were thinking it's going to be a close game. Well, the opposite happened. It was a straight blow-up, ass-whooping, ass-kicking, call it whatever you want, 38-3. Tom Brady put up a goose egg on his stat line because the only points came from a Ryan Suckup field goal. And because of everything that happened in that game, I said to myself, you know what? I had to get Matt back on. I just had to. Because who better to break down that awesome game than Matt Beast? So, buddy, how are we feeling?
Oh, man. I mean, elated, excited, happy, stress-free. So many adjectives to describe the feelings and emotions of that game. Going into it, the Saints have been coming off some really, really, really close games with the Chargers, the Panthers, and the Bears. They've just been – we just barely squeaked out these wins. And at the end of the day, all you got to do is go out and just win. Just get the – just stack up these wins and just keep going. And then eventually this team will show who they are. I mean, they had – the talent. I always thought they had the talent. It's just they weren't putting it all together. And last night, we put it all together for one of the best games the Saints have played, probably under the Sean Payton era, considering the opponent and who they're going up against. And, I mean, it's still crazy that Tom Brady has never been swept in the in a divisional matchup. But, I mean, sorry to AFC East fans, but, I mean, this isn't really the AFC East that he's in anymore. It's NFC South, and it's a much different animal for sure.
Oh, buddy, you're not upsetting me at all. For 20 years, I did not mind that at all. One thing I'm going to say quickly, and everyone will talk about how the networks and where they picked, but there's two players in this team whose efforts I think only have gone noticed by Saints fans who I'm paying the most attention to, and if I had to give game balls, I'd give these two men game balls, and that is Teron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk, because they were phenomenal against that Tampa defense Sunday night.
Oh, yeah, for sure, and they're great. And let me throw out this stat to you. Who would you think are the top three players in sacks in the NFL right now?
Lavonte David. I know Trey is up there. And who's the third? I'm going to say Myles Garrett.
Well, you're right with Myles Garrett. He's actually tied with Aaron Donald for number one. And number three is Trey Hendrickson from the New Orleans Saints at 7.5 sacks. That is crazy that Trey Hendrickson is number three in the NFL in sacks to me, because, I mean, for a while, Marcus Davenport was hurt, and Cam Jordan, he's been he hasn't been quite as productive as he normally is in terms of hurry, sacks, and production on the field, and it's just crazy that Trey Hendrickson's up there. And, I mean, Bruce Arians even had a sound clip of him saying the easiest person to guard guard on that defensive line is Trey Hendrickson, and then he goes out and gets technically three back-to-back-to-back sacks in one series, even though one got called back due to a holding penalty. So I'm sure that was a great moment for him. He was definitely hyped, and of course, like you said, Ramczyk and Armstead, when they're both healthy. Armstead, of course, he has his health problems sometimes, but when they're both on their A games, they're two of the best bookend tackles in the entire league. I mean, it's just amazing what these two guys have done. Ramczyk out of Wisconsin and Armstead out of the University of Pine Bluff. Shout out to that place if you know where that's at. But man, it was just it's just crazy to see Trey Hendrickson up there, and those two definitely did play well to their credit.
But it's just the fact too, because going into this game, everyone thought, "Oh, this Tampa defense." But the one thing I will talk box later. I just want to focus on the Saints right now. The one thing I want to notice of this game, though, is just, like, I feel like Drew, they made it simple. Like, everyone forgot that, oh, without Michael Thomas, they're nothing. Well, without him, they quietly have gone 5-2. They've been able to unleash other receivers. Like, there's the one tight end's name I'm blanking on right now. Not Hill, the other guy.
Adam Troutman,
who I heard Peyton loves. And then also, too, you had Michael Burton making plays, Latavius Murray, Alvin Kamara. Like, you guys whooped them, and Michael Thomas didn't even get a touchdown. That's the one big thing. So I'm like, coming into this coming Sunday's game for you guys, like, the only thing I have to say is, like, everyone's going to be so focused on, like, oh, how we get rid of, like, Tre'Quan Smith, Emmanuel Sanders, who both they had touchdowns, which I have to say the Tre'Quan Smith touchdown was probably my favorite of the game. Just the simple tiptoes in. I just love plays that replicate like that. The whole Santonio Holmes element from Super Bowl 43.
Oh, yeah.
But, man, like, and also, too, the one other thing I want to say is, man, that may have been Taysom Hill's best game since the Viking playoff game last year.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, Taysom Hill, he's another guy. I mean, that's a theme across this Saints team, is a lot of these players just have not expectations thus far this season. And slowly they're starting to put it together, especially with the culmination of this game. Taysom Hill went out there and had him a pretty good game. One argument that I've seen a lot, and I mean, I've probably mentioned it on the podcast before, is the whole people ragging on Drew Brees with his average depth of target and all that. I really wish people would kind of get off of that, because, like, we're taking away from one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, and the fact that the other night, Sunday night, is probably his last primetime game ever, because this is probably his last season, and that was his last Sunday night football game probably ever, which is crazy to think about. And, I mean, Drew Brees, he has there's some stinkers in there for sure in primetime, but for the most part, he's when the lights are on, that man is on. And last night for sure was that, because, like, with this Bucs defense, like you're saying, with the Bucs defense being really good, I found they're playing a lot of zone coverage and just trying to get to the quarterback and focusing on the pressures, and it just didn't work for him. I mean, you play zone on Drew and you blitz him, he's going to find the open man, especially when Michael Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are back healthy. And but yeah, it was a good performance by Drew, so I'm very happy to see him go out there and do his thing. And getting Taysom Hill as a cog in the wheel will be important going down the line.
Like, you know, my father's also a Saints fan. He was basically, every time Taysom Hill came out on third down, he was like, oh, come on, like, what's going on here? And then he makes a play. So it's, I'm like, and even too, like, he's doing special team stuff. He's, like, getting these nice QB runs in. He's had that night. He had a reception. Like, it's just like a jack of all trades. The one thing I want to ask you, though, is in the NFC, because I feel like you could give an opinion where you are being like a little bit biased just because it's your team, but at the same time, as a realistic fan, can you see this team returning to Tampa in February?
It all comes down to staying healthy and keeping luck on our side. And through these past couple of really hard games, the luck has definitely swayed our way in a couple ways. And the one thing that makes me worry is looking at the standings real fast here. I mean, of course, a couple teams that are up there, you got the Seahawks. And the Seahawks remind me a lot of the Saints when their defense was historically bad. You got Russell Wilson in the game against the Bills this past week. I actually predicted the Bills, which pats on back there. He was just trying to do too much. He ended up turning the ball over a couple times, because every time he goes up there, he's like, okay, I got to score because the defense might not be able to hold up. And that's what Drew was facing all the time. And that's why Drew, in that period of his career, was throwing so many picks. And now that his defense is competent, which is actually top, like, 3 or 5 in the league right now, which is crazy to think about. Granted, this game probably helped it a lot. It helps a lot. Although I will say the Saints defense, I think they're the most penalized in the league, and that doesn't really go towards stats or anything, so that hurts them a lot. But I think our biggest competition is definitely the Packers, because Aaron Rodgers is having a really good season. So I think it's going to come down to the Seahawks or the Packers that we have to worry about. And a whole big thing of getting to the Super Bowl is I really think getting the bye is going to be really important for any team that gets there, since there's only one bye to give out now. And I really want that bye. So I really need the Saints to keep it up and keep the pace, because right now they're at the top of the conference. And I need it to stay that way, because luckily one of our two losses was against an AFC opponent, so that definitely helps a lot. So if I had to give a prediction, I'm still going to go with my boys to make it to the Super Bowl, but I'm definitely most worried about the Packers, and if our defense, if we end up having to play the Seahawks, having to contain Russ will be a chore.
I agree with both those takes. It's just my only thing is I feel like if the Packers and Saints were to hook up again like they did on Sunday Night Football Week 3, it was a very close game, but then there was the non-Michael Thomas factor there. So if you add him in there, I remember that game. I think Alvin Kamara had like a crazy 50-yard run.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like both games, like, I would be confident. Like, say if it's the NFC Championship and it's one of those two going in, like, one of those two combinations for you guys, like, I'd still feel confident, but at the same time, too, I feel like it would be, I think, the game that we thought Sunday night was going to be. I thought it would, like, it would be, like, a 35-31, something like that, as I know I usually do. I did this Thursday night as him and I, Matt and I, recorded, because it was the, I can't believe I'm blanking on the Thursday night game from this past week. Lord, help me. Packers-Niners. I was like, nothing else is on, so I just put on NFL Network, and they happen to have the Cardinals-Dolphins game on from Sunday, which I want to talk about in a second, because it was another great game. But the my other thing with Sunday, too, is as soon as, like, the everyone picked on the end, I didn't know about the NFL Network and ESPN until, like, after the game was done, but when all the guys on NBC were going Bucks, I'm like, I think the Saints are going to win this game. And then the fact that they came out so strong, but even to where you guys got to them, there was that one drive where they got to the 1 yard line. They couldn't convert at all. I'm like, they got stuff, like Gronk's not catching. But the other thing, too, that I noticed about this Bucs team was they just looked dejected at halftime. Like, that's not usually what the Patriots look like. Like, I only say that because, oh, Brady wasn't there for, like, I don't know, 20 years. But they made no in-game adjustments, and like you said, they just kept trying to run the same stuff, and they kept playing a lot of, did you say zone defense or man defense?
They're playing mainly zone. I feel like in the first game, they're playing a lot of man, especially on Michael Thomas, trying to slow him down, and this time it felt more like of a zone, and they're trying to blitz a lot more, and but Drew was just throwing it way too quick for him.
Okay, that's the only thing, because, and even too, like, how there was so much, like, opening separation, even too, Drew was just getting in those, like, really nice, just balls, like, those nice, accurate spirals and everything, and even too, the fact that there was only the one sack just says so much, like, of how, hey, if you, like, if this offensive line gets the time to play, like, they'll win. And the only other thing I want to say, too, is I do not know who the offensive line coach for the Bucs is, but why do you match Tristan Wirfs against Cam Jordan? Now I get it. Tristan Wirfs has looked great as a rookie, but you let Cam Jordan bully you, you're going to have a rough night as a guard and a tackle.
To be fair, him or Donovan Smith, other tackle, were not playing well. Donovan Smith's definitely a weak point of that line. Tristan Wirfs has the talent where he can, where you can hope he gets there, but he is a rookie, so you got that going for you. I mean, the Saints, they even have a rookie who's important to their line, and they sometimes he's just not playing. Sometimes they have Nick Easton, the former guard from Minnesota, and it's kind of an interchangeable cog in the wheel, if you will. But, yeah, I mean, Drew was just carving him up, and the O-line was playing great. And to the credit of the O-line, the one sack that was given up on Breeze was from Jared Cook, the tight end. He actually gave up a sack to Shaquille Barrett. I don't know why you're matching up Jared Cook on Shaquille Barrett in the first place. But all in all, Jared Cook was about the only Saint on the team that just had a terrible night. I mean, drops, a fumble, that led to the Bucs having the ball on that one-yard line series there. But yeah, it's just a bad night for him, but good night for everybody else at least.
That's the most important thing, though, because like even too, when it was 31-0 at half, and who is it? I remember Al Michaels was saying, like, oh, hey, this happened before in 2013. Brady was down 24-0 at the half of the Broncos, and they came back and won an OT. And, like, I think some people were kind of like, yo, what? And I'm like, they have to say something to get people to watch. Like, I knew there was, like, oh, Brady could come back. But even though there's a chance there, yeah, Tom could do it, they made zero in-game adjustments. Like you said, they kept playing the same defense. Tampa's bread and butter this year has been their play action, which they didn't really run. I feel like New Orleans had a simplified game plan, but Tampa just overcomplicated things. And, like, I think it's the big difference when you overcomplicate your game plan. Like, even, yes, I'm going to go back and give another Pats example. Last night, everyone bitching about, oh, Cam didn't have these long bombs and he didn't have, like, his magnificent runs. You draw up a good game plan that's going to make your quarterback have fun and do easy plays, you're going to win the game more than likely.
To be fair, I don't think the play action would have worked last night anyway, since the Bucs ran the ball like a historically low amount for any NFL team in a game. They ran the ball a combined 5 times. So when you get down so quick, your offense kind of becomes one-dimensional. The defense knows you're really not going to run the ball because you got to play catch-up, especially when you're down that much that quick. So all you're going to be doing is throwing the football. And to be fair, when our defense is playing the Bucs, that's like one of their most inspired games all season, especially because Marshawn Lattimore, for whatever reason, whenever Mike Evans is on the field, Marshawn Lattimore goes Super Saiyan 3 Goku and becomes like literally the best corner in the NFL when he plays Mike Evans, with maybe the exception of one game they've ever had. Like, Mike Evans, never play him in fantasy when he plays the Saints, because Marshawn Lattimore is going to do everything in his power to make sure he does nothing. I don't know what it is with those two, but they always get into it, and Marshawn Lattimore seems to just have the guy's number. And like, if we can somehow hypnotize Lattimore into thinking he's playing Mike Evans every week, oh my God, we would be unstoppable.
I'm going to say something quick. I won my fantasy this week, well, mainly because of Kyler Murray, but I was playing against Mike Evans, and I think he had like 10 or 11 points. So just a little quick tidbit I wanted to throw in there. But no, besides this, I think, and also too for the Saints, their schedule is pretty favorable upcoming. But when I looked at it, I saw you guys have, I think, Atlanta 2 times like the next 3 or 4 weeks. I feel like those are games where you guys should feel confident, but at the same time too, divisional football can go either way. I'm not saying that to get you riled up or anything. I'm just saying, like, the game this Sunday, I think you guys should win. But then those Atlanta games, because Atlanta's a team that, where if they weren't the Falcons, they would probably be right up there in, like, 5-4 or, like, 6-3.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we split that series with the Falcons, because the Falcons-Saints rivalry is one of the most underrated rivalries in all of football, because those two teams just go at each other no matter who, no matter what the standings are that season. It's just always a hotly contested game, no matter what. I mean, I'm hoping to run the table on them because I hate the Falcons. And speaking of the Falcons, during that game, I was really hoping it didn't end up 28-3 at one point, because if somehow the Bucs came back 28-3 on us, I would never hear the end of it from the internet as a whole. But thankfully, that never happened. But yeah, hopefully the Falcons games can go well. But the pessimistic side of me is already expecting a split in the series. But optimistically, I could see us sweeping them. But definitely, there's a pessimistic side to me that thinks we're probably going to split that series. But yeah, I mean, this next game against the 49ers, we kind of lucked out, because this game could have been a really hard game to win, and with all the injuries they've been facing, it just does not look good for the 49ers at all right now.
No, that's what I was saying, too, because when this game came out on the schedule, like, 6 months ago, because the schedule came out in May this year, you look at it, and you kind of go, okay, 425, it's probably going to be, like, America's Game of the Week with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman, which, when they called the Saints this year, I don't know what it is, but I feel like Troy kind of doesn't like the Saints for some reason. Just that's what the vibe I get from him. But this week you guys have Adam Amon and Mark Sherlock. I think I fucked that up. And Lindsey's Zerniak on the sidelines. So it's like a pretty decent, not the Fox A crew, but it's still in that prime window, that 425. Because I think even going back to last year too, that Niners Saint game, I think it was like 49-46 or something like that, like some crazy scoreline. But that, I think this year's gonna be different.
Oh, yeah, it was. And going into that game, I remember people had questions about the Saints offense even then. I mean, there's been questions for the Saints offense coming off several games the past couple of years just because of the way we do things now. And Drew Brees was just on another level that game, and so was everyone else. It was crazy, that game was. And then George Kittle ended up killing us at the end there, which kind of sucked. But, yeah, I mean, there's no George Kittle this week for them, and there's lots of injuries for them there. But I never take any opponent lightly because every Sunday is a new Sunday and every game's different.
Oh, buddy, 100%. But I'm just looking up that stat line from this game right here from that one. It was 48-46. Pardon me, the score. But at the half, it was 28-27 for the 49ers. Like. Even, like, I'm just looking at it right here, too. You guys went up 20-7. You guys went 27, and then 27-14, and then the 49ers rally back with Emmanuel Sanders. A trick play with Emmanuel Sanders, Raheem Mostert. I know you like hearing about that, but it's just a quick little summary.
Yeah.
And also, too, the 49ers, that was actually the 11th win of the year last year, and the first time they had gotten to 11 wins since 2013. Oh, excuse me. The other thing I got to say too quickly with Saints-Falcons is we got robbed for a third year in a row. We could have had that be the primetime Thanksgiving game, but hey, I'm not complaining about Baltimore-Pittsburgh. It's just 2018, we had it in New Orleans. 2019, it was in Atlanta. 2020, I don't know why they couldn't go back to either or. Just a quick thought.
For sure. I mean, that would be a good staple for Thanksgiving, for sure. I mean, the Saints-Falcons always have great games. And that is a rob. What are all the Thanksgiving games this year?
The first one is Detroit versus Houston.
Ugh.
Which, yeah, I know. Washington, Dallas. And then Baltimore, Pittsburgh.
Well, at least I got Baltimore, Pittsburgh.
You got to go through two games of a. You basically have to go through a burnt turkey to get to the pumpkin pie. Like, that's the only. Like, I don't even eat pumpkin pie. I just. Not really my thing. But. And for everyone out there, oh my god, he doesn't like pumpkin pie. Like, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people don't like pumpkin pie. Basically, you gotta go through the crap to get to the good.
Yeah, I mean, that's a rough lineup. I'm sure the NFL is not very happy about how that came out. I mean, the Lions get a game every year, so it is what it is. And so do the Cowboys, pretty much. But at least they can be happy about having Baltimore and Pittsburgh out there. That'll be a great game.
And it's like you, what was I going to say? Well, it's to quote Brian Griffin to a group of lions in a zoo. Hey, it's Thanksgiving. You should be in Detroit losing a football game right now. But it, honestly, I would rather it be Lions-Texans than I think the last 2 years was like, I think it was like the Lions and the Bears for 2 years in a row, which like, I'd rather see that than the latter. But even to like, I think the first game has potential just because you honestly, you don't really know what you're going to get from either team any week. Like, they could either suck or they could be great. But, man, it's the second game that I'm just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Like, Dallas, Washington, I'm like, there's no promise there. Like, it's going to be bad.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Because even, too, just looking at that game, I'm like, it's 4:30. Like, I know you can't put different teams on there, but I feel like, I don't know why they didn't put Dallas-Pittsburgh in the Thanksgiving slot. Like, I'm sorry, I know it's probably the broadcasting stuff, because I'm pretty sure each year it flips between, I don't know who's broadcasting what, but I think 1 year was one game CBS, one's Fox. But, man, you have a chance to put that, like, imagine if we got the game that, and we'll talk about that right now with Dallas and Pittsburgh, but if that game was Thanksgiving, I don't think anyone would be mad.
No, I mean, that game ended up a lot closer than a lot of people think, including myself. Dallas really gave Pittsburgh a run for their money to the point where you're like, wow, is Dallas really going to end up beating the undefeated team? And a lot of times it plays out like that. The undefeated team ends up losing to a weaker team. It just happens that way a lot of the times for whatever reason it is. Sometimes it's just because they're sleeping on them, and these weaker teams normally just jump up on them. Like I see the Jets upsetting someone at some point during the season, for sure. I feel like the Packers were like that a couple years ago when they played a Chiefs team that wasn't really what it was quite yet. That's just one off the top of my head that I can think of that ended up making them 15-1. But yeah, it's normally some of those surprise games. And I mean, the Dallas QB actually played pretty good. His name escapes me at the moment.
Garrett Gilbert.
Yeah, Garrett Gilbert. Him and Jake Luton going out there and actually playing really well. So shout out to both of them.
Can we talk about Garrett Gilbert, Jake Luton for a minute? Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, but that spin move that you had, like, if, like, as you, like, Jacksonville's only other option's Mike Glennon, so I'm just, like, at the point where I'm like, yeah, you keep Luton in there, and if you, like, even though they lost, I feel like if they don't end up with the first overall pick, you keep Jake Luton unless you want to go for Justin Fields, but that's another discussion. But no, back to the Dallas-Pittsburgh game. Pittsburgh has a really bad habit of playing down to the level of their competition. They did it against the Broncos. They did it against the Texans. And I think that could be their ultimate kryptonite because they too, like, if you look at Pittsburgh's schedule, I'm gonna pull it up right now just because, A, it piques my curiosity, and, B, it, like I said, just curiosity peaking. We're here. We're on the fly. You know this is live when I'm looking up stuff on my phone, which I do pretty often, but... is what it is. Like this week,
Ben's against, on the COVID list too.
Yeah, Ben's on the COVID list. They're playing the Bengals this week, which I honestly would not be shocked if the Bengals won that game. But after that, it's at Jaguars versus Ravens versus football team, at Bills, at Bengals versus Colts, at Browns.
I mean, none of those are just really give me wins unless you just want to say Washington is, and I guess the Jaguars. They could end up having a game like against the Cowboys where they play down to the level of the competition, like you said. It could definitely happen.
Exactly. Like, even too, like, I would not be shocked if Cincinnati steals either game, especially because if Ben's not playing Sunday, and it also, because you got to remember, he hurt his knee in that game. So if he's hurt plus the COVID list, like, Baker's on there too right now. You saw what happened to Matt Stafford because Detroit played like shit on Sunday against Minnesota, and Stafford was not at practice all week long. He even had to, I did this one watching Red Zone, or I heard this, but basically they said, what did they say? That Matt Stafford, like, had to take his own, like, brought him in on a private jet. He had to quarantine from the rest of the team at the hotel, and he didn't see anyone, I don't think, until Sunday morning. So, it's something very similar, like, that happens to Ben. Like, I would be very concerned. So, I would avoid taking the Steelers in survival pools this week. I actually, if I'm going to be honest with you, who to take with for survival, Matt, I'm taking the Saints.
That scares me to think about, because normally when there's just a game on the Saints schedule that everyone's like, okay, they just came off this huge win. They should go out and destroy this 49ers team. For some reason, that scares me because I just get pessimistic about everything and start worrying about even the smallest thing. Even though this Niners team shouldn't be really scary, I mean, you never really know. I mean, I could see a lot of people definitely taking the Saints in a survivor pool setting if you're still alive. Me, myself, I've never really done survivor pool stuff because I end up losing, like, the first week. But that'd probably be a good one.
But quickly, with the game, I'm just going to give a quick prediction for the Sunday. I think you guys will win, but I don't think it's going to be, like, another 38-3 game. If I had to put a score line, I'd say, like, 28-10. Like, you guys have a good game, like, another four-touchdown day, but Nick Mullins has one good drive.
Yeah, I'd probably say 27-13, something along those lines.
Yeah, and meanwhile, too, if there's another pick for survival, I'm not going with it personally because I don't like to pick against them, but say Ravens over Patriots, I know they had hit that historic win, but I'm going in thinking the worst because of what happened last year and how our defense has played. There was, honestly, this weekend, there was a lot of good games. Like, and also, too, you know when you pat yourself on the back for getting the Bills right when I got them wrong? There's another one, too, where I don't know if you picked Arizona or Miami, but I know you picked the Baltimore Ravens and I picked the Colts, and I looked silly for picking the Colts because, like I've said this before, Philip Rivers is that guy where he'll either look great or piss you off, and this week he pissed you off, and he looked like an idiot himself. Like, there's that one fumble scoop-up where he's just like, it's like if you're on the ground and you're trying to, like, reach the ceiling. It's like, eh. Like, I know Matt and I can't see each other right now because we're just on the voice chat. We're not on video chat. But it's like, you're just like, you know how a baby lays on the ground and there's that, like, weird toy thing above them that are supposed to, like, grab shit?
Yeah.
That's what Philip Rivers looked like trying to stop the, I think it was Chuck Clark when he got that fumble. I'm like, what the hell are you doing, man?
Yeah, I mean, if the Colts are playing a good defense, I definitely wouldn't want a part of them, especially because, like, this team is so heavily predicated on trying to get the run game going, and they've had a hard time of it. I mean, Jonathan Taylor has been kind of a disappointment so far. The week before, Jordan Wilkins and Nyheim Hines went off, but just didn't happen this time around. But they were playing the Lions, to be fair, last week, and the Lions' run defense is probably one of the worst in the league, if I had to take a guess. I mean, you just had a good Ravens team. Granted, the Colts defense is really good, and the Ravens didn't look great either. I mean, but I'd definitely take the Ravens offense over the Colts offense at this point, considering Philip Rivers just likes to dunk it off to his running backs and throw to tight ends. And the Colts tight end crew room isn't really that great, and their running back room is not producing very good, even though they have, on paper, a really great O-line. It just has not manifested altogether for Jonathan Taylor. But going forward, I don't know what to expect from this Colts backfield. I'm kind of getting into it because I have Jonathan Taylor in a whole bunch of dynasty leagues, so I'm kind of stressed out about it, too, at the moment. But I don't know just what to expect from him at this point. I guess you just got to hope that he goes up there and continues to play and get snaps and starts to actually gain confidence at some point. Because, I mean, last week I feel like he was benched because of Jordan Wilkins and Nyheim Hines playing so well. And then this week he pretty much got the start on the series, and then he had the fumble, and that just screwed him up. And from there, Jordan Wilkins was starting to get more of the carries. I feel like it was almost a 50-50 split, though. But that's enough on the Jonathan Taylor tirade. But, yeah, the Ravens, they're a good team, even though they're not as good as they were last year. Their offense just hasn't looked as dynamic. Mark Andrews has been kind of a disappointment, just to name another fantasy relevant player that just hasn't really been producing well. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts there.
Well, with the Colts, I think we're going to find out a whole lot about them because this coming Thursday, that's a game that's all for all the marbles. They play the Colts and the Titans play each other this week, and I think they play each other Thanksgiving week. So those are going to be two very intriguing games, especially this Thursday night too, where for a lot of the times, it's like, oh, for the Thursdays, I always complain because you have to, like, kind of sifter through crap, even though some of the games are actually, looking back at the Thursday night schedule, like, I remember, like, looking at a game like Jets-Broncos and thinking, oh, this game's going to be terrible, and it was a good game. Another one being the Eagles-Giants, same thing, too, which, unfortunately, Big Rat, who likes to come on when the Giants are on primetime, him and I like to record during then, but the big thing with this Thursday night is, though, it's going to be a game where I'm not necessarily going to say it's good off the hop, but I think I'm just going to say you're going to find out a lot about both the Colts and the Titans just because we have a supposed great offensive line, but like you said, too, they've struggled a bit this year against a suspect defensive line. And then you have the other side of the ball where you're going to have this really good Colts defense where they can Darius Leonard and like DeForest Buckner and them are good going up against Derrick Henry, so that's just a little thing I want to throw in there, too, which we could talk about later on and give our predictions for, but that's just something I want to throw in there, like I said, about this coming Thursday, but that's one reason why now I'm kind of glad I avoided Taylor in fantasy. Sorry for your loss, Matt, but like you got me back by saying Mark Andrews, too, and that pains me a lot. Like, I'm on the question now of, in one league I have him, and then I have Hockenson, and I'm trying to figure out who to start this Sunday.
I would start Hockenson every week right now until Andrews proves me different. But the thing about Andrews is when he has a good game, he has a great game, and it's kind of like a blow-up game. He's very volatile in that sense. But with Hockenson, he's really elevated. He's like in top five tight end category right now, which is crazy to think, and it's a good thing that he's emerged. I mean, after the Lions spent a first-round pick on him.
Like a top 10 pick, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, him and his teammate Noah Fant, they're both showing out, for sure. It's crazy that one team had both of these two tight ends. Granted, Noah Fant, not to the quietest level as T.J. Hockenson has arisen, but yeah. Yeah, the Thursday game should be a really interesting game for both of these teams. But yeah, I said we can get back into that a little bit later.
The only thing I was going to say, too, is I think the reason with Fant as well is because he struggled with injuries for the first couple of years of his career. One game I want to talk about right now, not only because I feel like I'm watching on the NFL Network, but Matt, I know you're not directly a fan of this. Actually, before we talk about the game, I want to ask, because I know the head coach of Arkansas unfortunately got diagnosed with COVID, and the SEC got like a hurricane of it this week. Is Arkansas's game still good for Saturday? Because I heard that Tennessee versus Texas A&M got postponed, and so did Alabama versus LSU, but I feel like for Tennessee and LSU, those are kind of blessings in disguise. I know it sounds bad, but I just know Tennessee, it doesn't seem like they have the best culture right now, and also too, LSU is going in the opposite direction that they were last year.
From what I see, I think it sounds like the game is still on, just the coach, Sam Pittman, will not be there. A quick side note, shout out to him. He's done a really good job. I was to the point where with the Razorbacks, it's just like if I tune in, it's kind of rare, especially last year, because it was just so bad for a good while that we just had it so bad. And it's to the point where 3-3 is a really, really, really good step up, because going into the season, I didn't know what to expect. I was like, okay, if we don't even win a single game, I won't be surprised, but glad to be sitting at 3-3. That's a pleasant surprise at this point in the season. But, yeah, he will not be there at the Florida Gators game.
And also, too, I'm just looking at my phone right now because I want to also see playing the Gators. Ooh, that's a team I want to look out for to win the East. But right now, one score I want to point out, Kent State over Bowling Green. It's not even the end of the first half, and it's 38-10. So, Mac football is back, baby. Just have to get that little tidbit in there. But hopefully now, I assume, if anything, I feel like they should move that Arkansas-Florida game into the spot where Alabama-LSU was, because otherwise I'll have dead air time. But for all we know, because I feel like that won't be a Brad Nessler and Gary Danielson kind of game, which I have my – I watch a bit of the SEC, and I kind of – I'm a little iffy on Danielson myself. I know I'm kind of going on a rant right now, and everyone's going like, this is NFL. I'm like, it's called football talk for a reason, because we can talk college ball. There are games. The game's at 7 o'clock, at 3-3. Let's see how Arkansas has been this year. Georgia, Mississippi State, Auburn, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Tennessee, Florida, LSU, Missouri, Alabama. I think you guys, it can go in there and finish, like, let's see, 3-4. I think you guys can go 5-5.
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be a win for this season because, I mean, this schedule just on paper looked so brutal going into it. And the fact that we've actually already gotten 3 wins when we were losing to just mega trash teams last year is definitely a huge step up. So, got to give him props on that because I don't think anyone was really expecting anything out of this team. For quite a while, and just being where we are now is a massive step up.
You know what? Like, I feel like sometimes, like, when you have a crap, like, when you cheer for a team that's not doing the best, you know what? If they can win a few games here or there, it's like, it's all you can ask for.
Oh, yeah.
Going back into the NFL quickly, not quickly, we're going back here right now. The one game I want to talk about, and, like, because I sidetracked when talking about the SEC and their COVID situation, which I feel like we should have brought up. Looking right now at this Miami-Arizona game from Sunday afternoon, it reminded me a lot of Big 12 football. just pure offensive execution because no one's playing defense. And if you like that, folks, the Cardinals play the Bills this Sunday, so expect a very high-scoring game in that one. I want to check, actually, I'm going to look here right now. I don't know how much of this game you watched, Matt, but honestly, really good football game with two teams who have promising futures in this league.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I don't really sit and watch one game anymore, unless it's the Saints and only have it on Red Zone, so I can just kind of keep up with fantasy scores and kind of see individual players throughout the games. But looking at it, the whole Cardinals-Dolphins game, it was a huge offensive game. Kyler was very good. Tua was very good, which the Miami Dolphins have to be very excited about that. And, I mean, for the Dolphins to be sitting at 5-3 on the cusp of looking at a playoff berth, that is definitely something I'm sure they would take, especially had Big Rat talking about it right now. I'm sure he's very excited, especially seeing how Tua's looking good. Preston Williams has been playing pretty good, Dante Parker. And then all those, all the weapons he has out there. On the Cardinal side of things, I mean, Kyler Murray, this man is just insane. The fact that he had 100 yards rushing, and he's just been doing that like it's nothing. It's just crazy how good this guy is, and I have so much respect for him. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks in the entire league, and their offense is just on another level, to be fair. They just didn't quite get it done against the Dolphins. But a really close game, and from what I saw in Red Zone, it looked really good.
I only watched this game because I just didn't care for Raiders-Chargers and also two Steelers-Cowboys until like it got exciting. I was kind of like, not boycotting, but I was kind of like, you know what, like I really don't care about this game, so I'm like, I'm going to watch Dolphins-Cardinals because I'm like, you know what, it's on, it's good. Because like even to Sunday, I literally watched Red Zone. My mom came home early, but she was, because like with her, she just likes to watch one game, so I feel like that's how a lot of our parents were raised, where it was like just one game, where if for them it's like seeing all these games at once, like they'll be watching one game and they'll go, what happened? And then I'll go, oh, it's Red Zone. It just goes from game to game to game. Like, we love it for fantasy football, and just because I love it because there's no better words in TV than 7 hours of commercial-free football from Scott Hansen.
Uh-huh.
But
I mean, Red Zone's really good. I love it.
Oh, you can't go wrong with it. Like, literally just watching it, like, it's one of those things where I'm like, this was a creation of heaven. And one day I feel like the goal I have in life is to have Scott Hansen's bladder, because apparently he doesn't go to the bathroom for 7 hours.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has a hard job there, just having to sit there and cover it the whole time. No commercial breaks, and a commercial tries to sneak in there, they quickly cut away from it. He's definitely he definitely has a task ahead of him, but he does a really good job at doing it.
Exactly. Another game I wanted to get into quickly because it was on Red Zone quite a bit was the Seahawks versus I was going to say Seahawks Cardinals. I'm really all over the place right now. That's going to be a banger of a game next Thursday night. The Seahawks Bills game. We were talking about this earlier, but I gotta ask you, where do you? I know they're 7-2 right now, but where do you see the Bills going right now this season?
I'd have to pull up the Bills schedule real quick, but I mean, going into the season, I was really high on the Bills, especially with the whole way the AFC East is shaken out. I mean, I had your Pats going at about 7-9, 8-8, honestly. And then I had the Dolphins. I didn't expect them to be this good, and I had them going about the same, and I thought the Bills were going to end up being like 11-5, somewhere around that area, and win the division pretty easily. But it looks like the Dolphins are going to give them a run for their money, honestly. And, I mean, you never know. Your guys could come out and string some wins together, so you never really know how things could go out. Yeah. But, I mean, looking at their schedule ahead, they got the Cardinals, Chargers, 49ers, Steelers, Broncos, Patriots, and the Dolphins. So, I mean, they have some tough games for sure. You got to think the Chargers are probably going to figure out a way to lose the game. Same with the Broncos. And the 49ers game is definitely favorable. But, I mean, the Cardinals game, the Steelers game, the game versus the Patriots, and the game versus the Dolphins, those are all going to be hard games for them. So, I mean, let's see here. So them going 10-6, 11-5 is looking very probable right now, if you ask me.
No, I agree. And also, too, I agree with your take, because I was looking at the Patriots' schedule after the last night's game. There's the fan in me that's going, we're going to go 10-6. But then there's the realist in me saying, best case scenario is probably going to be 8-8 or 7-9. That's for New England. But for Buffalo, like, I'm looking at it, like, Arizona can go either way. I think L.A., they'll end up winning. I think they'll beat the Niners. I think the Steelers will be a loss just because in the primetime lights, the two games Josh Allen's had where he said to stand alone this year is where he lost, which was against the Titans on that Tuesday night game. And then the interesting Monday night at 5 o'clock, week 6 game against the Chiefs. So I think the Steelers is a loss. Broncos, I think, could shock and maybe, just because they do have guys like Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon, and the Bills' run defense is very suspect. And then the Patriots game and the Dolphins game will be tough. So, yeah, out of there, you know what? I think 11-5 is where this team's going to finish.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes the most sense. It really just depends on how they come out and play against these tougher teams. And, I mean, that could always end up losing a game to the Broncos, like you said, and just never really know quite how it will go down in the end. But, yeah, I mean, I like the Bills, mainly because I have Josh Allen in Dynasty, so I'm kind of biased there. So I have an ulterior motive for that. Granted, great Dynasty quarterback. I would just never recommend you to watch his game sometimes, because sometimes they just look really bad. But this year he's been pretty good when he's not playing a great defense, granted. And when he's playing a defense that's suspect, like the Seahawks defense, he goes up there and just has a great game. I mean, 31 of 38 for 415 yards and 3 touchdowns. He just went off. And I think them adding Stephon Diggs this year has done wonders for this guy, because for the longest time he was just leaning on John Brown. And John Brown and Stephon Diggs, they're kind of a similar kind of a skill set wide receiver. They're both really good at route running, and they're both pretty quick and can get down the field. And that really goes into Josh Allen's big arm and helps. They definitely complement each other very well, was what I was trying to say there. But I mean, just a massive pickup for them, and I mean, it's worked out really well for them in the long run.
Oh no, it has for sure. When I look at Buffalo, though, it's just the only thing I see is, like, look, this Sunday was a game that I just didn't think they'd win, because, like, look, you have a big opponent coming to town. You have the Seattle Seahawks. This is a game where, look, if you want to put your stamp in the league and solidify yourself, I'm not ready yet to call them a Super Bowl contender, just because obviously I'd still put Baltimore, Pittsburgh, and Kansas City ahead of them. But at the same time, too, they're knocking right on that door. Like, I think if they can just adjust a few things defensively, but my biggest worry for them is, though, and I did have my, I actually don't know if you knew this or not, but I had from the Buffalo Fanatics Network, I had, his name's Joe, him and I talked about a month ago about this team, and he's worried about losing Brian Daboll as a head coach this year. He's our offensive coordinator right now. Because for all you know, like, this offseason's going to be a very interesting head coaching carousel.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It should be interesting to see how everything shakes out across the league and where people end up going. I mean, the Jets are definitely, I mean, if they're not out there looking for somebody, I don't know what to think if they keep Adam Gase. They just can't. It can't happen. And I'm sure the Lions are going to be looking for someone. Just to name two teams off the top of my head, that should be interesting to see what ends up happening.
But all in all, you know what? This was a game that they needed to win. I think coming off that, also too, I picked them because I felt like coming off that emotional win against the Patriots, they kind of like, you know when teams have like a really emotional win, but then the next week they kind of like, not lay an egg, but they kind of like lose their footing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's happened in Miami a bunch where Miami's beaten New England, and then they'll like, I remember this happened a few, like, they need to win this game to keep the playoffs hope alive, and they lose. So, Big Ryan actually talked about this a few weeks ago, and I just felt like this was a game where Buffalo was set up to lose, and you know what? They proved me wrong, and they looked fantastic. But also, too, I got to talk about this quickly because I don't know if you know about this or not, but the Buffalo Bills right now, their fans have come along raise money for a local children's hospital in Buffalo because, what's it called? Josh Allen's grandmother passed away Saturday night, and I think they've raised, like, over, like, the amount's insane. I'm trying to find it right now, but, oh, right here. It's for the, it's called Oshie Children's Hospital in Buffalo. On the hospital's, it's their third birthday today, in memory of his grandmother, Bill's Mafia has donated over $200,000 to support the cause. So if you want to do that, just go to kaedahealth.org to donate money today. I believe they're asking for $17 is the appropriate amount that's being donated. So if you're in the giving mood, that's just one thing I wanted to mention quickly because that's honestly a remarkable thing to do. Because you do hear a lot of these like sentimental stories as well when someone does play well after someone's death, even as a close family member.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, I mean, I got to shout out Bills fans for that. They always there's a couple of stories where they end up doing that. I mean, a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, I remember they donated a lot of money to Andy Dalton's foundation because he pretty much helped the Bills get into the playoffs with the win that he had. I forget what team they ended up beating that day, but, I mean, the Bills fans went out and donated to his charity for helping them in their playoff drought. And, I mean, the Bills fans are very passionate about their team, and they definitely go out and do some good stuff with some of these donations that they get in the news for. So it's very commendable.
I think it was the Ravens, the Bengals beat that day, because I remember watching that because – It was a crazy series of events, but then they had an absolute stinker of a playoff game. But no, even though I have my beefs with them just because obviously they're a rival team, you have to respect Bills Mafia for doing stuff like this and coming up big and emptying their pockets. Just also looking back at the schedule too, like Denver Atlanta, like meh. Or not meh, but like it was an alright game. Denver didn't look that good. Houston Jacksonville was interesting, but at the end of the day, both teams suck. One game I want to talk about here, I'm still looking right now at, is Carolina versus Kansas City, and I picked the Chiefs. I bet four games this week for spreads. I bet that the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to cover 15, and also I bet that the Chiefs were going to cover 11.5. Both didn't come true.
No, I mean, it didn't. The Panthers played really good football. I was kind of scared they were about to beat the freaking Chiefs there for a minute. I mean, Christian McCaffrey coming back was huge. I mean, this guy's one of the best running backs in the NFL for a reason. And unfortunately, it seems like he got hurt again. I don't think it's a major injury. I think he hurt his shoulder. But I don't think it's going to be something that's going to saddle on him for a very long time, maybe a week at most. But he's definitely the guy out there that just helps this offense go. And I mean, Mike Davis, he had some good games in Christian McCaffrey's absence, but you really cannot replace a guy like this. And it means a lot to this team for sure, having him on the field.
Matt, one thing I want to list off to you, and also too, for anyone, if I'm cutting up your team, I'm not saying that. It's just like, look, your game's not that much to talk about, but I'm in a few fantasy leagues, and I got to tell you, the roster, I got my ass whooped in this league. 208-111. Do you want to hear who I was playing against?
I mean, Christian McCaffrey's probably on the team.
His running backs are Christian McCaffrey and Dalvin Cook.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, Dalvin Cook's been amazing this year. That man's certified beast mode this year.
I remember watching him coming out of Florida State and thinking, like, yeah, this guy can be something. And it wasn't even like I didn't really watch much college football when he was still in school, but it was this weird documentary that I found through, I had like an online streaming service, a legal one for those of you asking. And I remember seeing this guy and I'm like, this guy's got potential to be a good running back. It's just, unfortunately, his rookie year he tore his ACL and then ever since he's been dealing with injury stuff. So we'll see, but yeah, that's just one thing I wanted to list off to you. And by the way, the quarterback was Josh Allen and the other receiver was Tyreek Hill. But I feel like how you are with the Razorbacks this year is what the Carolina Panthers are. You know what? Their fans are probably happy. Like, I know they're 3-6 right now, but I think they're doing better and they're in a lot more games than people thought they would be.
Who? I'm sorry, I kind of blanked out there for a second.
Carolina.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, their head coach has come through. Joe Brady is an amazing offensive coordinator, to his credit. That man had LSU looking amazing last year, and them picking him up and having them on his team and having an offensive scheme that Teddy Bridgewater is familiar with has definitely helped a lot, I think. And it's sped up the process of things getting better. And I mean, look out for this guy to possibly be a head coach at some point if the trajectory keeps going this way. But to also Matt Rule's credit, he's also been really good as well. A big part of any football team is who you have as your coach. And a lot of people get stuck on, oh, well, this player busted, this player's not playing good. Well, I mean, sometimes they get into a really bad fit, and I mean, they might have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have a good head coach utilizing your talents, it's just not going to work well. And it looks like the Panthers might have that with Matt Rule and however long Joe Brady stays there as their offensive coordinator. And I mean, to Matt Rule's credit, he brought on Robbie Anderson, who I've said before that I didn't think that it was going to amount to anything, but he coached him back in college, and he has him looking as one of the top receivers in the NFL, which is crazy to think about. And Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, I love that guy. It sucks that he went to a division opponent. That's the thing I just hate about it the most, because I just don't want to root against the guy. But I'm glad he's having success.
You know, the one thing I'm going to say right now with the Panthers is I honestly wouldn't be shocked if Joe Brady's a head coach within the next couple of years. Because, look, you're going to have these teams who are looking for offensive geniuses to come in and run your team. So we all talk about, yes, like Eric Bieniemy, Brian Daboll. Man, Joe Brady's making his claim to be a head coach in the NFL. But, no, I agree with you. Matt Rule is like a coach's coach. For those of you wondering, like, he went to Temple, he went to Baylor, two programs that were struggling. Baylor almost won the Big 12 last year, which I know isn't really the hardest thing to do, which, not knocking on the Big 12, just saying that a lot of the teams there don't know how to play defense, but, yeah. Just one quick example, because I know I'm going off topic, but I do this a lot. I remember last year, it was Oklahoma LSU, my mom asked me, oh, does Oklahoma have a chance? And I said, no, Big 12 can't play defense. What happened? LSU put up like 60.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, I mean, granted, they ran into a historically amazing offense. So there just was no stopping that LSU offense last year. So to their credit, I know their defensive prowess isn't that great. But that LSU offense was just playing on easy mode.
Exactly. You know what? On the topic of head coaches, though, I'm going to give, and also too, one thing I'm going to say, because I'm not going to include Gase in this list because he's probably going to be fired, but for those of you asking, will Gase be fired right now because it's their bye week? No. And for those of you going, oh, but he's so bad, your next option is Greg Williams. And also, too, one thing I didn't learned today, because Rich Eisen was on Toronto radio today, as I was listening to him on my drive home, he said that the ownership group for the Giants, the Johnson family, has never fired a coach in season. So I think they're just going to ride it out, and then that week 17, they play the Patriots again. They're going to call him into the office and say, thanks for your 2 years of service. Now get the hell out.
Yeah, I mean, it could be contributing to the tank, too. And, I mean, I guess you have an ownership that just does not want to just fire a coach midseason because they don't want to have the hectic change of pace and turn around so quickly in the season. I guess that makes sense as far as just the tank strategy to it. I mean, you got to commend it if that's what it is at the end of the day. But you got to wonder, if they get that first pick and Trevor Lawrence is sitting there, does Trevor Lawrence even want to go to the Jets? Would he just decide to be like, hey, I'm just going to go back to Clemson again? But you just never know how it's going to work out. It definitely be interesting to see what the Jets decide to do.
It's going to be very, honestly, it's going to be very interesting with the Jets because, look, if Trevor Lawrence doesn't want to get out, you still have Sam Darnold. Obviously, with the rookie scale contracts, it's very easy to get out, but, man, they have an interesting offseason ahead of them, too, because even if they get, if they don't get the Darnold, if they, and I was about to say the Darnold pick, if they don't end up getting the first overall pick for some reason, that's not an attractive job to go to. But if they do get that first overall pick, you're going to have a lot of coaches that are going to be going like, hey, I want to coach this team. Otherwise, they're going to end up with, like, fucking Dan Quinn coaching that roster. And no, that's not a shot at the Falcons. It's just an easy one to take. It's like, who's a bad head coach that they can hire? Like, hell, what was the guy's name? You're going to get, like, Ben McAdoo coaching the Jets. Like, he already ruined the Giants. Like, why not go ruin the New York Jets? But no, I actually want to play a game with you right now, Matt, just because I'm thinking about other topics to talk about. I'm going to list you a few head coaches, and I want you to tell me if you think their job security is in jeopardy or not. Does that sound like a plan?
Sure.
The first one is Matt Patricia in Detroit.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely on the hot seat. He was a hotly contested coach, too. Be on the hot seat going into it, and if the Lions just keep at this middling pace, I see him gone.
It's kind of like a one-step forward, two-step back thing for the Lions, where I feel like, hey, they can have a good game, or they can look like decent, but then they'll have a game where they just, it's like, okay, what's going on here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's definitely one to definitely get canned. Just depends on how they finish the year. He's definitely probably coaching for his life right now.
I will say this, though. I do think that if they... I think it's him and the general manager gone, and I think it's a bit of a rebuild. I think, honestly, strip it down. I think Matt Stafford's gone after this year. They'll find somewhere for him to go, or they'll just cut him. I know everyone's saying, oh, he's such a good quarterback, and I'm saying, yeah, but you know what? If it's not working out, you can't just keep... Basically, you can't keep putting lipstick on a pig because that's a Lions right now. Let's be real.
Yeah, I mean, at some point you got to cut your losses and get what you can for your current assets and go out there and have something to do. And if I'm not mistaken, I feel like most of their offensive weapons, like Kenny Galladay, Marvin Jones, I feel like they're free agents next year. If I'm not mistaken, I might be mistaken, but. I feel like there could be a changing of the guard for sure there for the Lions.
I'm going to look that up right now because I'm honestly curious to see what his contract situation is. Kenny Galladay, who's actually out right now, and even though it's Tuesday night, I got to mention it, Mac alumni. Let's see right here. Not seeing any. Oh, yeah, he signed a 4-year deal, so yeah, he's up at the end of the season.
Okay, so I guess that's true.
Yeah, he signed a 4-year deal in 2017, so that would be the end of this year. But even a lot of their guys, too, like, I'm just looking right here, like, for example, Adrian Peterson on a 1-year, Reggie Ragland 1-year, Geronimo Allison 1-year, Desmond Trufant was a 2-year deal, but who knows. Danny Shelton was a 2-year deal, but we'll see what happens there. So there's just chances where a lot of these guys can get, like, can be gone at the end of the year. I'm just trying to get to Marvin Jones right now just to see what his status is. Even though Marvin Jones is only 30. I thought he was younger than that. Yeah, Marvin Jones signed a 5-year, $40 million contract in 2016. So 16, 17, 18, 19, this is the fifth year of that contract. So I think Marvin Jones at the end of the season is, you're right. So I think, too, they're going to walk and then we'll see. They can go after like a Jamar Chase or something in the draft, but we can ultimately see. The next one's an interesting one. Anthony Lynn, LA Chargers.
I mean, at the end of the day, if you're going out and having all these close games, and I mean, I feel so bad for Chargers fans because just every week it's something. And I thought they won this game this week, but. Turns out they didn't after they reviewed the play, and it just sucks. But At the end of the day, that tells you what kind of team you are if you're going out and losing these close games, and I think coaching has a big aspect of it. So I could definitely see Anthony Lynn gone, and I could see them trying to find someone to pair up with Justin Herbert to hopefully build a dynamic offense for the future.
Oh, no, I agree with that, too. I think it's just, look, Lynn's a good head coach. I just think, look, he's going to find an OC job somewhere if he does get let go from this. Like, it's not like he probably will get another chance. It's just, look, when you have only the one playoff appearance in his four seasons, and the rest of those two have been, even last year, too, they were 5-11, but they were a very suspect 5-11. What I say by that is, if a few of those games go their way, they're easily a 500-plus team.
Oh, yeah.
The same thing this year, too. The next one is a little obvious in the direction I think you're going to go, but you know what? I'm going to end this because if you just give me one quick second, I got to add someone in here. That's right, folks. I'm going to add one person to the call. So let's get this person in here to see what's going on. See if he answers. Sorry, folks, for some dead air time. We're trying to figure stuff out, but. Boom, there he is. We are... We'll be right back, folks.
He doesn't have audio.
Oh, wait.
There's his audio.
Wait, you there?
Yeah, I always had audio. I was just not talking.
Okay. yeah, I couldn't hear you. I was about to end it. I was like, can't hear you. But anyway, folks, make this show even bigger. Matt Beast and Big Rat on the same podcast. Like, this is... I had to go all out for this because we were talking about this earlier, but all three of us... It's the first time I could say it in a while. But all three of us, it's Victory Week. Victory Monday and Tuesday for the three of us. But I'm actually rewatching the game on the NFL Network right now. Sorry, Matt, but I'm going to come over to Big Rat for a second. Big Rat, how'd you feel about that Big 12-ish performance from both Miami and Arizona Sunday afternoon?
It was spectacular. It was my favorite game of the year for all the obvious reasons. It was such a joy to watch. It was truly, truly great. I'm a little annoyed that this defense kind of, mobile quarterbacks like beat up most defenses in the NFL, but they shouldn't beat them up to the point where you're giving up 30 points every single time, like they did against Josh Allen, Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray, and even Gabe Kamm, one of Kamm's best games. So, as like looking forward, I'm a little annoyed by that. I want that to be rectified a bit. But obviously, the offense is balled out, and I'm extremely happy with how Tua played.
I'm glad to hear it, because even too, there's the one play. I think it was like late in the third quarter. It was in the fourth quarter where Tua like evaded two tacklers, made two guys miss, and then got the first down. As soon as that happened, I'm like, I think this team's winning this game.
Yeah, and there was one where he caused Buda Baker, I think, to totally whiff on a tackle early in the fourth. And then there was another where he evaded two tacklers, and even Andrew Catalan, commentating on the game, couldn't help but just yell out, "Tua!" as he was running for the first down. It was a joy. And that drive not only helped us win the game, it also kind of solidify the Dolphins fans. It's not just that he can play well, he can like carry us, because the defense was getting destroyed. They didn't have any running backs. They lost Preston Williams the entire second half of the game. Tua like can put the team on his back and carry them to a win on the road. That's really good to see this early in his career.
For all the people who were thinking, oh hey, it was after the one LA game, if the Dolphins will use their top 10 pick, and yeah, I know they're 5-3, but guess what? You have a dumb GM in Houston who's now fired, who gave Miami, who now made that Miami trade into a top 10 pick for like Kenny Stills and Laramie Tunsil. So Miami fans got to be pretty happy about that. We'll talk about Miami more in a little bit, but Big Rat, another game. I got to get your opinion on this, man. Sunday Night Football, because we have one guy in this chat right now who is just above and beyond happy about that game. But what did you think about the 38-3 ass whooping the Saints laid on the Buccaneers?
Yeah, it's a very good day for Matt. I don't know how much I said it when I was on the show last week, but people have been kind of sleeping on the Saints a little bit because they were kind of winning all these close games against mediocre teams, but they were doing all of it without Michael Thomas, and a few of those games without Manny Sanders. Like, it was just, they were just winning every single week pretty consistently. While this Bucs team, they had had their lumps. They lost to the Nick Foles Bears, and I think we're now starting to realize when you lose to a Nick Foles Bears team, that's not a good thing, given how they've been the last month. And they struggled to beat the Giants. They were lucky to win that game. They were down by 17 to the Chargers. There were some warning signs that I think people were kind of ignoring with the Bucs, especially their offense. Their offense is 18th in yards per play, and that was before that Saints game. Before that Saints game, they were 18th in yards per play. Brady had thrown for less than 7 yards per attempt in like 5 of his 8 starts, now 6 of his 9 starts, including the second Saints game. There were some warning signs that I think people were ignoring, all because they beat up on the Packers, which was a nice win, but it shouldn't have outweighed everything else. And people didn't give the Saints enough respect for beating them up in week one. And, yeah, I mean, I thought the Saints were the better team. I thought they were going to win. I did not
predict that.
No one did, 38-3. Like, no, I won't get ridiculous here. But, yeah, I mean, I think the Saints showed that they're the best team in that division. I think that's indisputably true, whether they win this division or not. They are better than the Bucs, like, straight up. It's impossible to say otherwise. And I think they put themselves in position, and I know Matt's starting to think about this, like kind of like a Peyton Manning romantic 2015 season. And granted, Peyton was playing worse than Breeze is right now. Breeze is still playing solid. Like, that the romantic, like, there's the whispers that this could be his last year, and, you know, they're winning these games against the elite NFC teams, except for when they lost to Green Bay. I mean, you can start to talk yourselves into them getting the one seed, getting a bye, and maybe this finally being the year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was talking about it earlier. We were going over the Saints' chances, and, I mean, our biggest adversaries are going to be the Seahawks, who have a very questionable defense, and you're not going to win championships if your quarterback just has to do everything. I mean, Russ was trying to do everything in this Bills game. He ended up having 4 turnovers, so that kind of screwed him there. And the Packers team, I mean, when it comes to the playoffs, they just hadn't got done. And, I mean, I can say the same thing for my team, the Saints. But if they somehow meet in like the NFC Championship game, I mean, one of those has to be in there. And I'm hoping the magic of the possible retirement of Drew Brees. I mean, he was really close to retiring last season. He had to go take a spirit walk on a mountain to decide that he's going to come back, apparently. And I mean, even Russell Wilson gave up his Pro Bowl starting job to Drew Brees. And I mean, I know that's not a big deal, it's the Pro Bowl and all that, but I mean, it definitely shows that it was very real. And I mean, there was even talk of Tom Brady possibly even going to the Saints if Brees didn't come back. But he's back here, and I think this team is looking like it's all in right now, as long as they can stay healthy. And I mean, the talent's there. They just had to show up, and they finally showed up in this Bucs game, and they actually rose to the occasion. And if they can just build upon this, the close wins will be like, hey, we could have lost those games. It could have been in a really worse position than what we were. And at the end of the day, sometimes you just got to go out and get the win, no matter how ugly it is, and live to fight another day, and you can eventually put all the pieces together down the road.
And if I may, also, like, very sorry to interrupt, Griff, just, like, the three things I was really happy with, well, one, also, as you know, like, there was no Michael Thomas in that Packers game, so there's something there, obviously, you can look forward to a rematch. It could be in the rematch could be in the Superdome. I know the first one was also in the Superdome, but in the playoff atmosphere with Michael Thomas, you know, like, that could be very helpful. And I just want to say, as a Miami fan, not just as a Miami Dolphins fan, but as a Miami Heat fan, like, for the basketball team, you know, one thing that they get so much credit for is being so versatile and playing so positionless, where they're so well coached and they can just kind of deploy all their players in a really good offensive way, in a very different way. All their entire roster, there's a different way that they can all succeed, whether it's three-point shooting, their nice mid-range game, post-up, they got bigs who can shoot, they got guards who can get to the rim, like, they kind of have it all. And, like, when I watched that Saints game on Sunday, it just kind of reminded me of that in a very different way, where, you know, the completing passes to 11 different receivers, Taysom Hill having maybe his most pronounced role in a big game so far. It's just like they just have, they're so versatile. They have so many different guys that can score, and they're so well coached that they have so many different guys that can get a first down or can get a big play, whether it's you play two quarterbacks, you know, pretty consistently. Or all the running backs, all the receivers, the tight end, like you're getting Troutman involved, who I really liked coming out. I drafted him in dynasty leagues. Like, it's just so cool, like, how deep they are. They have, like, 11 different guys that can score a touchdown every given Sunday. It's just, it's fascinating to me. And I think that's a really good thing to have. That's how you can survive 6 weeks without Michael Thomas.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it really speaks to Sean Payton. And I think when he gets in a situation where he's down Emmanuel Sanders, down to Michael Thomas, and it was evident in the Panthers game, Marquez Callaway, he had a huge game. This undrafted rookie just go out there and just goes off. And I mean, the Saints have a way of finding these just gems in later rounds and undrafted free agents and making them look like superstars. And when you have a great quarterback, it's a lot easier to pull off something like that. And I mean, I know Drew Brees is in the twilight of his career, but I mean, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league still. And I know he does have like all the air yards and airing it all out, but I mean, just give him a guy who can get open and it's a wrap.
You nailed that on the head, but I want to shift focus now because I feel like Big Rat's going to love to talk about this, but man, Bruce Arians is not, I don't see what people see in him. I honestly, I'm going to have a hot take right now. I don't think he's that good of a head coach. I like him going out there and constantly blaming Brady when honestly, him, Leftwich, and Bowles collectively coached a awful, awful game Sunday night. That's just me, though. Try to figure.
I can come up with a, I can meet you at like a middle ground. So, I thought he was genuinely a good coach with the Cardinals. Like, I just think he turned around that culture. Like, people forget the Cardinals, you know, after Kurt Warner left, they had this four-year lull where, like, they couldn't score. Like, they had all these bad quarterbacks and they couldn't do anything. And Bruce Arians came in, they became a tough team. So they won 10 games his first year, didn't make the playoffs. They won, I think, 11 or 12 games the next year and would have been the one seed if Palmer didn't tear his ACL. And then the next year they make the title game. Like, I thought they were genuinely well-coached and very tough. I think since he came back from retirement, I don't know what it is. Like, the podcast I listen to a lot around the NFL podcast, Chris Wessling speculated, just by, like, reading his interviews and his press clippings, he's kind of viewing it as kind of just like, he didn't like retirement. He wanted to come back. He wants to get his friends opportunities, like Byron Leftwich, someone he, you know, coached in Pittsburgh and has known for a long time. Todd Bowles, his defensive coordinator in Arizona, and all these other, his staff is very diverse. And like, I think he like just really wanted like a lot of these guys to get pronounced roles, to get opportunities, maybe get promoted and get head coaching job or coordinator jobs elsewhere. It seems like his mentality isn't really the same. And I think this, I mean, this is also, as I'm sure you can imagine, Griff, this is probably like a really miserable team to coach. Like, just the expectations are so high. And, like, there's no time. Like, they have to win now every single week. That whenever they lose, it's probably just like a huge gut punch. And it just sounds like he's kind of exhausted, you know, like, with the expectations of this team. And I agree with you. He shouldn't have thrown Brady under the bus the way he did. I think he's just frustrated. He's frustrated coaching this team. It's not, I don't think he quite has that same mojo that he had a few years ago since he's coming out of retirement. So I'll kind of meet you halfway. I do think he was actually good as a head coach in Arizona, but something's not right now. And it's leading to a lot of mistakes. And a lot of times the team comes out flat. A lot of times he's saying the wrong things in pressers. So, yeah, there's definitely something to that.
I'd like to add that, I mean,
floor is yours.
Coaching a team like the Bucks, they have all these personalities on the team, and they just added a huge one in Antonio Brown. And I mean, granted, this is probably the best situation for him to be in because him and Tom Brady seem to really click together. But I mean, having to coach Brady, I'm sure that's something because Brady obviously he has a certain mentality about him for sure. He kind of does things his own way. And adding Gronk in there to the mix, Mike Evans is definitely a temperamental guy. And like I said, adding Antonio Brown in there is definitely something. And if they could ever figure out, I know O.J. Howard got hurt, trying to get the tight end stuff together. I feel like Bruce Arians is just never, his strength has never been relying on the tight ends. And if he could ever kind of unlock that secret, I mean, that'd probably help. And, I mean, losing O.J. Howard does hurt that a lot, but I think that's something that he could focus on and maybe help a lot. But, I mean, Big Rat, with the expectation level, I mean, I'm sure it's very tiring to go in there and come into a team, and team that's not really quite your own, wasn't built as your own, and you didn't build it from the ground up. I'm sure it's very hard with all the expectation levels.
Yeah. Now I'll send it back to you in a second. Like, this is different. Like with Arizona, like they were kind of rebuilding. Like they were, he took them over when they were like a really bad team. You know, when they were like 4 to 5 wins, they didn't have a quarterback yet. They didn't have, like, aside from Fitz, they were still kind of like developing their new players. They were developing John Brown. They were developing Honey Badger. They were developing Michael Floyd. David Johnson was there when Bruce Arians drafted him. Like they were kind of, he kind of was able to grow with them, which, to Matt's point, even though they started winning right away, he kind of was able to get guys and grow with them and go on a journey with them, rather than all these guys. I mean, I don't want to say they're a team of mercenaries, but it does feel like that sometimes. Like, I tell you guys, as a huge Ndamukong Suh fan, like, hearing a lot of his interviews in Miami, like, that's just his mentality. Like, just come in, take a check, move on, go to the next team, they'll give him a check. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy or a bad teammate. It's just that's kind of his role, you know? And, like, him coming in, AB coming in, and Gronk coming in as Brady's guys, managing all this can be hard. And I just, like, to Matt's point, if you guys remember a few weeks back when Gronk was asked about not getting any targets, and he said, like, jokingly, "I'm here to block AB." And one of the Bucks beat writers for The Athletic said, I mean, as you can probably infer, this was kind of his passive-aggressive way of saying, "Throw me the ball more." He wasn't actually, like, pumped to block every play. He did want the ball, and that was kind of his, like, little cute way of saying it. And, you know, they bring in AB, and the Bucks writers ask Bruce Arians, "Godwin's and Evan going to be happy, you know, losing some of their targets and losing some of their role?" And Arians, like, wiped it off. He's like, "Eh, it won't be a big deal." And when Mike Evans, you know, like, when Marshawn Lattimore is, like, bragging about, like, shutting down Mike Evans again on Twitter, I think he said, like, when he was guarding Mike Evans, Evans only had two targets and no catches. And I think Bruce Arians, like, with, because Brady, in my opinion, that game was forcing the ball to AB a lot, more so than he should have, and it was forcing. It was definitely on plays where maybe it wasn't the best design for the coverage for the ball to go that way. I think Bruce Arians needs to make sure Michael Thomas doesn't get this illusion. Michael Thomas feel like he's losing his role, so he tries to build up Michael Thomas, and in doing so, ends up knocking Brady. It's just a complicated puzzle where, like, you're trying, helping one guy almost comes at the cost of hurting another, and balancing that all. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's probably the hardest team this year, honestly, like, of anyone.
Okay, I'm going to take back what I said. Like, I think right now he's not the best just because, look, there is a lot of pressure and expectation where, like, yeah, you're right. I forgot about that year, actually, where they were 10-6 and they missed the playoffs. Even too, they were in, I believe, he was there for the early years of Patrick Peterson's career as well, a corner, in Arizona. But even too, like, if you remember when Bruce Arians went in and coached the Colts when Pagano got sick, wasn't a lot on him, and he went, I think, 6-1 or 6-2 during the 8 games that Pagano missed because of leukemia. But no, like, I think in this situation, it's not so much that he's bad, it's just, look, it's kind of like, I think it's like a couple who's always bickering at one another. It's like, look, someone's always going to say the wrong things, because Bruce obviously is the kind of guy who calls people out in the media, where Brady and Gronk come from a culture where you're chewed out behind the scenes. You never hear about it publicly. So now that it's heard about publicly, I think some guys have to take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, there is a lot of passive aggressiveness. The only thing with Tampa that, like, I noticed from this game off the get-go was, they made absolutely no in-game adjustments on Sunday night, and the team looked defeated heading into the locker room. I said this like an hour ago with Matt, but like now that Big Rat's here, and I know Big Rat loves to talk about his most favorite quarterback to talk about in the NFL, Tom Brady. You got to do those adjustments. So, like, for when people are wondering why are the Patriots able to pull off all these comebacks, like 24-0 against Denver Sunday Night Football, like I think 2013. And the most notable 28-3, because Bill Belichick is the master of making in-game adjustments, which is something that Byron Leftwich just didn't do. They kind of just were stagnant and kind of accepted their fate at halftime.
What's concerning is at times, like, with the, because the excuse you can make if you're a Bucs fan is like, okay, well, they're trying to incorporate AB. That's a big change to the offense. So they kind of got to get that worked out. My thing is, just, I mean, you don't have time for that anymore, especially that game. Like, you don't get to, I think Bruce Arians said after the game, the players were really pissed. They wanted their revenge. And he just told them, it's too late. You don't play them again. You got to just on to the next opponent. It is what it is. Like, I don't think they realized, like, that was not the game to experiment, to let's get Brown involved. That was the game where you needed to do your A game, and you needed to make changes, and you needed to recognize the urgency of the moment. So, like, while I agree with Bucks fans, like, you know, we all know the offense isn't always going to be that bad. Like, this was their biggest game of the year. They couldn't afford to take chances. They couldn't afford to figure things out during this game. They needed this one. They needed it more than the Saints did, because the Saints have already beat them once. And so I think just that lack of urgency almost. And then just like you said, they kind of gave up. Like, they just kind of, like, put their heads down and were just like, ah, well, I think after they got stopped on the goal line, I think that's when they were just like, yeah, this is it. This just isn't going to happen today. And I, like, that's just not enough. Like, you know this very well, Griff. Everyone brings the onto Cincinnati, the Kansas City Monday night game, right? Where they were blown out. But Belichick, I believe, in the Do Your Job interview, always said that what gave him encouragement for the rest of the season was they fought hard in the second half, even when it was a blowout. And, you know, they orchestrated a touchdown drive in the fourth quarter, even after they were in their ass kicked. And he liked that energy that they showed, and he thought that was something they can build on, even though they lost 41-14. But there was none of that in this game. Like, it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And that's, it just reminds you, like, to your point, the people who made those comparisons, Sunday Night Football 24-0, 28-3, this is not the same organization. It's the same quarterback, but it's not the same organization. It's not the same coach. It's not going to follow the same result.
No, it's not. And I want to get both of you guys back in here because actually, Big Rat, right before you came on, Matt and I were playing a game of, or I was just throwing out names to him of coaches who I think could be on the hot seat. And the two we said so far were Patricia and Lynn, who we both think are probably going to get gone at the end of the year. The next one, and I'm going to have Matt start this first because he was here first, and I'll have your thoughts on him. And Matt, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm good, but I got a train.
Pardon me?
Just unmute for me.
Okay. The one coach I was going to say right before Big Rat came on was Doug Marrone. Where do we think he stands for the Jaguars going forward?
Yeah, I think he's gone. I think he was almost fired last year anyways. Maybe they made, like, some behind-the-scenes deal of, like, hey, like, you know, if you can pull it out, like, if you can make them more competitive and tougher than you may think, then we'll give you another year. But I just don't see how he comes back. I think they're going to start fresh, get a new quarterback, get a new coach, like, completely rip it from the studs, from the ground up. And I don't see how you can stand to your fan base going into year five with how bad the last 3 years have been. Because the last 3 years, they've been among the worst teams in the league. It's nice to make the conference title game. It's not nothing. Like, it's nice to do that. But there comes a point where 3 straight bad years is just too much to overcome. So, yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, this team, they have a really good young core. So whatever quarterback comes in, it's going to be looking at some pretty good weapons with DJ Chark. Chenault has been really consistent so far, which has been a nice surprise to see him already contributing so well. And, I mean, James Robinson's emerged as well. If he continues to produce and stay this way even next year, who knows? But it'll be interesting if they go get a quarterback, like maybe a Fields, and see how things meld together. Maybe they can go get an offensive-minded guy to pair with him, and that'd be a very interesting combination there for sure, to see what the Jaguars end up doing. And, I mean, they lost a lot of their pieces because I guess these players just don't want to be in Jacksonville, and I guess that might speak to the front office. So I think some changes definitely need to be made.
And I think the Cons have been paying too much attention to All Elite Wrestling and need to pay more attention to their football team. Sorry, not sorry. Just me having a little bit of fun there. The one coach, obviously, we're not going to touch is Adam Gase because we kind of all know what's going on, what's going to happen there. The next one I wanted to ask about, and either one of you can start with this, Matt Nagy.
Yeah, I can speak to this personal experience because I will admit, like, as a Dolphins fan, I think I got Gase wrong. And I think it's for the same reason that the Bears fans that defend Nagy are going to get Nagy wrong, too. I was really, like, Gase's first year, I've said this in the pod before, he went 10-6, the Dolphins made the playoffs. They made the playoffs for a team that people thought would suck, and I can't say that enough. Dolphins fans, the NFL media, all said that 2016 Dolphins team would be terrible. All of them, across the board. And they made the playoffs. It really would be not that different than if Matt Rhule and the Panthers made the playoffs this year. That would be the comparison. A team that everyone thought was going to be really bad ends up winning 10 games. And if Matt Rhule were to do that, we would all give him a lot of credit, right? So I do the case for that year, but here's the problem. Like, Gase won a lot of games in Miami. The offense was always bad. And he was winning a lot of close games, and whenever he lost, he would get blown out. And I kind of, like, would always defend him. Like, he keeps winning. Like, why is everyone so upset? But those underlying metrics, like, indicate that moving forward, you could eventually fall apart. And I think this is what I got wrong with Bill O'Brien, too. Bill O'Brien would win the division every year, and I was like, well, why does everybody complain? He wins the division every year. But he would win it in an unconvincing way. They would win a lot of close games. I believe in 2018, they won the division with a negative point differential on the year, like a negative 11-point differential, which is usually a red flag. And then eventually, you don't win these close games. You don't win, and then you're like Gase going 0-9 this year, or Bill O'Brien starting the year 0-4. And that's what I think with Nagy. He's won a lot of games. I think he's 8th in the NFL in wins over the last 3 years, which is impressive. No lie, it is. But the offense has been very bad, and that's his specialty. What gets you hired is what will get you fired. And for Bears fans who are still clinging on to him, I just think eventually that luck kind of runs out where you keep winning despite having a bad offense. And eventually you just kind of have this, like, 0-5, 0-6 stretch, and you get fired. Because when you can only continue winning games unconvincingly for so long before the Jenga piece gets removed and everything just kind of crumbles to the earth. So I don't know if he'll get fired. We'll see. It depends on what the organization does with Brian Pace and all that. But I think he's definitely a strong candidate.
Yeah. I would have to see how the rest of the season goes out. And I mean, the Bears' offense has been just looking god-awful, to say the least.
They can't score.
Yeah, they just can't score. They just can't get it done. And, I mean, I think this regime is kind of slow to move on. So I think if anything, it'd probably be next year if he continues to not show out in good ways. And I mean, the offense looked good that first year. I mean, Mr. Trubisky was looking pretty good in the system. I mean, it just has not panned out past that season. And I mean, I just don't really know what else I could do, honestly. I mean, Allen Robinson's kind of wasting his talent over there, which I feel bad for him because he is a great wide receiver and so underrated and just doesn't get the credit he deserves because of who he has throwing him the ball. It just doesn't work, man, and it's sad to see. But I think he's going to end up staying for another season, maybe midpoint the next season if they start off really badly and their offense just continues to look like a stinker. They might just use the excuse of, hey, maybe it's just not the right quarterback for the systems with Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky, with Nick Foles, who has bounced around to multiple teams at this point, and Mitch, who's obviously looking like a failed project at this point. So maybe they try to get another quarterback and end up wasting his career, hopefully not. I don't hope a guy wastes his career under a regime, but I could see that being the path to Matt Nagy being canned at the end of the day.
My thoughts on Nagy is I agree with Matt. I think Nagy gets brought back for 2021. I think it's Ryan Pace who's on his way out the door this year, just because, look, you have, especially too when you see moves like, and bringing it back, but yes, look, and I know we're 3-5, but when Cam gets signed for that cheap and they basically had to give away, I think, a bit of capital to pick up Foles' expensive contract, and also to the fact that not a lot of people remember this, but John Lynch fleeced them to move up a spot in the 2017 draft when we all knew all along in that draft Lynch was going to get Solomon Thomas in that draft. It's just Lynch kind of forced Pace's hand to move up, and I believe San Francisco went from the second pick to the third pick, but then got like three additional picks on top of that, and I think Chicago only got maybe one other pick apart from moving from third to second when they could have gone their guy at third overall anyway if they didn't move. So that's just one thing I want to point out, is that I think if I had to say what GMs are on the hot seat, I think Ryan Pace is on his way out the door, but I do think Nagy is another year, and then the GM will have whoever is the new GM in power will have kind of like a feeler year, and then they'll decide whether, hey, if Nagy's our guy or not. Because a lot of the times the new GM comes in, a new head coach comes in, like look at what happened with the Giants where you had Dave Gettleman come in, and then Shermer was fired, and now Joe Judge is brought in because that's Gettleman's guy.
Yeah, and just to put a bow on this, they gave up a fourth-round pick for Nick Foles. I just looked it up. And for Cam's problem, I mean, Cam has not been perfect. He's had some problems, but I think pretty clearly he's been better than Nick Foles this year. Nick Foles has been, this is kind of my bit. When I come on your podcast, I bury Nick Foles, but he's been very, very bad. He's been, the Bears' offense has indisputably gotten worse since he came in. Like, against the Colts, they had 3 points until late in the fourth quarter. Against the Titans, they scored 17. Not that bad, right? That score of the game was 24-3 with 5 minutes left in the fourth. 5 minutes left in the fourth, it was 24-3, Titans. They only scored three against the Rams. This is the NFL, man. Everyone's putting up 25 points these days. Like, they can't score at all. And, so for as bad as, Cam has had some bad games, but he's definitely an upgrade.
Oh, yeah, and imagine if Cam had, like, an Allen, no disrespect to Jacoby Myers, he's been balling out lately.
It was his birthday yesterday.
Yeah, give Cam Allen Robinson, and how good would he be looking right now?
Mets fans would probably trade Jacoby Myers for Allen Robinson as much as they like the kid.
Yeah, for sure.
I got Big Rat. I know you and I never got to really talk about this besides you collapsing on the floor when Cam got that rushing touchdown with a minute left. Some people were telling me, like, oh, hey, you shouldn't be too happy with that win. You know what? It was the ugliest win I'd seen the Patriots win in I don't know how long. And the one thing I'm going to say right now is Joe Flacco looked like 2012 Joe Flacco.
Yep.
But what the hell are you doing running a play-action bomb with 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter when you're trying to put a bow on a potential upset of a game? As soon as I saw that and the 12th man moment, I'm like, okay, the Jets are back to being the Jets. I'm like, there's just silly errors. And also, too, when you look at if the Jets could fire Gase, I said this to Matt. I think I said this before you came on. The Johnsons haven't fired a coach midseason ever. They always wait till the end of the year. And also, too, if you want to fire Gase, your next best option is Greg Williams, which honestly, you know what? I'd rather stick with Gase than Greg Williams because Williams lost my respect after Bounty Gate win. Matt will probably know about this. He threw, I think Jonathan Vilma and someone else under the bus.
Oh, yeah.
Suspended by the league for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're much better off with. Look, for all of Gase's problems, you can't put Greg Williams as the head coach. I just think that'd be a disaster. So.
Yeah. Oh, and also, too, I will say this as well, and because if for any of you listening to this podcast, if you want to listen to my thoughts on the Patriots-Jets game from last night, Phil and I came on right after the game and gave a post-game analysis, but I will say this, that was Cam's, I said this last night, I'll say it again, that was Cam's best game since the Seattle game.
Yeah, and I saved my fantasy week. Now, for those wondering, that's why I collapsed to the floor. I had Cam in fantasy, and I was down by 5 points, and I only had Cam and no one else. And earlier in the game, Cam handed it off to Rex Burkhead on the goal line instead of Cam scoring himself, which tilted me off like no one. So to see Cam actually get the sneak in, it saved my week, and I collapsed to the floor. It was a joy. Yes, he looked great. He looked great, and look, I know the Jets suck, but I said this last night on Twitter, it takes some toughness to pull out a 13-point deficit in the quarter. I know the Jets suck, but it's still not easy. It's still a lot of pressure in the moment. It takes guts, so good for him.
Yeah. And the only other thing I want to say right now, too, is like you said, Jacoby Myers had a great game. And also, too, the Patriots defense played like shit, but you know what? They made plays when it mattered with the J.C. Jackson interception and making them go 3-and-out with less than 2 minutes to go to give them a chance to win the game in regulation. The last thing I want to do, just because like we've been on here for a while, and I know Big Rat's only been on here for a little bit, but I got to get, and I'm going to say this before I go off air, the three of us have to do a full podcast sometime down the road. We're going to get a date, guys, because even though this is a little short sample size, us three talking football, there's nothing better than that.
Always down.
Love to hear.
For sure.
Matt, you and I elaborated on it earlier, and because I don't know if I'll be recording, if an episode will be out before this game airs, I wanted to talk to you guys about the Colts and the Titans, and I'm either going to let one of you guys start with this, but I want to know, what do you guys think this game's going to be like, and who do you think's going to win this game Thursday night in a pretty big divisional showdown? Either one of you can take the floor first, whoever wants to.
I'm going to take the Titans myself. I just don't believe in this Colts team. As I was talking about earlier, I don't know what they're doing with the run game. Jonathan Taylor seems like he's in the doghouse, even though he's been very disappointing to this point, and deservedly so. Probably needs to sit and try and give Dwayne Wilkins a try to try and boost up the offense. And I don't know. I'm just not trusting Phillip Rivers or really any of the passing game options on this offense. And, wow, I mean, Ryan Tannehill, he's very consistent. Him, A.J. Brown, and Derrick Henry have formed a really formidable team. It kind of reminds me of a better version of the Texans. I've said that before when they were a Matt Schaub, Johnson, and Arian Foster team. Kind of reminds me of that, just a better version of it to an extent. But yeah, I mean, I just don't see the Colts being really put up too many points on the Titans, even though the Titans' D-line, you mentioned it earlier, has definitely had its deficiencies. And man, I'm glad the Saints dodged that bullet with Jadavion Clowney, he just a random offshoot there. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I just don't see the Colts being able to do enough. I just don't put a lot of stock into their offense. And the Titans, I like them as a team. I really do. I really think they're a good team. And I don't know. I don't even really see this game being that exciting, honestly. If I had to put a score on it, I'd probably say something like 24 Titans and the Colts, but like maybe 10.
Yeah, I mean, you got Hendrickson and Davenport and all these guys. You don't need Clowney anymore.
Exactly.
Eli played great against Tampa. Like, well, one of the good stories from the game. I'm with you largely. I'll say for the Colts passing game, I mean, sadly, I've been following the guy for a long time. It looks like T.Y. Hilton might be dust. T.Y. Hilton, for those that don't know, went to FIU. And that's actually, Florida International University is actually in Miami. It's actually in the heart of Miami. Right in the Miami area, in Miami-Dade County. It's right near my hometown. I mean, my house, actually. So I've been following him for a long time, and he's been so much fun to watch in the league. He just might not have it anymore. He gets hurt all the time, and when he was playing this year, he wasn't that threat that they needed. They don't really have a big play on that team. I was a big Jonathan Taylor fan at Wisconsin. He destroyed my Hurricanes 2 straight years in a bowl game, and, like, absolutely destroyed them. Like, I've always been a big fan of him. I thought he should have had a shot at the Heisman last year. And he's been disappointing. It just goes to show that, you know, there's no such thing as a sure thing, because he was as close to a sure thing as I thought. He's huge. He runs a 4.39. He produced in college. He wasn't one of these athletic specimens who had no production. He produced, and he produced at a young age. He produced as a true freshman. I just like, what more do you want? He can do everything. And yet, for whatever reason, behind a good O-line, it's not working. I don't know why. Because show how weird football can be sometimes. If you want to give the Colts offense a semblance of hope, I would say Michael Pittman. Mm-hmm. Because we've seen all these rookie receivers, all of them, T. Higgins, Justin Jefferson, even Jerry Jeudy started popping last week, Chase Claypool, Ray Gore had a good game for the Eagles on Sunday night. So we've seen all these, CeeDee Lamb, obviously, before Dak got hurt. We've seen all these rookie receivers start to shine, and Michael Pittman, you know, played the first few games, went on IR for a long time, came back last week, got like a bunch of targets, but didn't really do a whole lot. You could maybe see him blossom, and if he blossoms, that could maybe be the thing that unlocks the passing game. to the next level. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. But I think that would be the thing to watch. If they all of a sudden get better, I mean, that would be the reason, if I would guess. But I'm going to pick the Titans as well. Probably, I'll make it closer than you. I'll do it like 21-14 kind of deal. I think the Colts can beat them in the rematch in Indianapolis, though. But that's a few weeks down the line. But for now, I'll take the Titans. And just, also, before we go to Griff, just very quickly want to remind Bobby and Danny, for years, said that Nick Foles is better than Ryan Tannehill. And I just feel obligated to bring that up on the show every time Ryan Tannehill comes up. That's all. Thank you.
That's another episode I got to get soon. I got to get Bobby, Danny, and Big Rat all in one room, all on one Skype call to discuss Nick Foles and amongst other NFL topics. Apart from having a YouTube channel, I actually kind of started watching recently because it appeared on like my homepage, and it's just like him and his now fiance, which, by the way, congratulations, Michael Pittman, recently engaged. Younger than all three of us, I'm pretty sure, because actually, this is going to sound really weird, but I'm not sure exactly how old everyone here is, because I never really asked that question. But Michael Pittman's only 23, and he's already engaged, so you know what, Michael and Kiana, congratulations. I know that through YouTube and Instagram. But no, on another note, he did get hurt. Like I said, too, you know what? That YouTube channel gave really good perspective and everything, too, because I think he was either a knee or just like some ligament damage in his leg that he had. But no, Michael Pittman was a guy that I was about to say, too, that look, if the Colts want to get better offensively, they got to rely on him. Jack Doyle's kind of been a bit quiet this year. Like last year, he was really good for like from a fantasy perspective, but this year he hasn't really done much. Jonathan Taylor was a stud at Wisconsin. I Big Rat, add Jonathan Taylor to the list of teams that made Big Rat upset. Add him and Dalvin Cook on that shit list of his. Sorry, buddy, I had to say it.
Hey, Dalvin Cook will forever have the top spot because he did it for Florida State, our fiercest rival, year after year after year. So he'll always be number one. But Jonathan Taylor, definitely right up there next to him.
And, that's just what I wanted to say. To be honest, I could see this game going either way. I could see... Oh, also, too, just as I'm watching NFL Network right now, comes up, Jack Doyle has a concussion and he didn't participate in practice today, so even more stuff to worry about with the Colts. I just think at the end of the day, you know what? Phillip Rivers lately... Oh, even Mo Alie-Cox is limited, and T.Y. Hilton, too. Man, the guy, it seems like every year he's got a different injury. Like, one year it's his hip, one year it's his, like, his knee, one year it's his, like, this year it's his groin. But if he could stay healthy, he has potential. It's just he can't do that right now. But if the Colts want to win, apart from getting the throwing game going, I think, you know what, you got to run the ball well against this Tennessee defense because they're having a hard time stopping stuff. So if you want to, I think this could potentially be that Jonathan Taylor breakout game where we see him shine, but at the end of the day, we're going to be like the NBC crew was on Sunday night, and the NFL Network and ESPN all pick the Bucs. All three of us are picking the Tennessee Titans to win this game because at the end of the day, too, I think, you know what, Derrick Henry, I think it's officially Tractor Cito season. So I think Derrick Henry is going to have a good game running the ball unless DeForest Buckner or Darius Leonard get to him. And for score, I'm gonna say it's closer. I'm gonna say 21-17 that the Titans win. But Big Rat, I did like your say for example, if the Titans win this game, Colts win the next game. I like that a lot.
I have a lot of Jonathan Taylor in fantasy football, like a lot. So I would love for him to finally explode. Like I was so convinced he would. So that would be lovely. Absolutely. Also,
thank you.
Last thing, also to your point about Leonard and Buckner, Colts D-line, like, sneakily, the best in the league, like, top five. Like, it's that good, according to the metrics. Titans O-line, you know, no Taylor Lewan, like, got beat up a little bit by the Bears last week. That might be something to watch if the Colts were to pull off the upset. But yeah, I think they're likely split it either way.
Don't think any of us have any arguments to say with that. But anyway, guys, this has been quite a long episode. Matt, I appreciate you sticking out for almost 2 hours tonight. Last night, I recorded my shortest episode ever. Tonight, one of the longest episodes ever. But you know what? When you've got a room with three guys, Matt Beast, Big Rat, and myself, Griff, who love to talk football, the conversation can go on forever and ever. But unfortunately, guys, I'm going to end this right now. Like I said before, Matt, thank you very much for sticking it out for basically what was like almost two episodes. And as Matt too, Matt's going to be on his high horse all week until the Saints kick it off this Sunday against the 49ers. But one point I got to say is, Matt, you should talk to the Saints. I need those Color Rush uniforms to be the Saints' new full-time away uniforms. Those uniforms are amazing.
Oh, yeah, they are amazing. They're out there looking like a freaking Tommy from the Power Rangers. That's the funny comparison I like to throw out there. But in my biased opinion, they're the cleanest uniforms in the league.
Well, anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening to this, guys. Thank you very much for coming on, both of you. Tonight, I did have a plan where I was going to surprise each of the other person of, oh, hey, Big Rat, you're here, or Matt Beast, whichever one got on first. But it's like, oh, look, I got to add someone in, and then I was going to add the other guy in. But we know that we're going to talk off microphone to get this going again so where we can have a full episode of the three of us talking football. But everyone, guys, I hope you enjoyed Week 9. I know I did, even though it was a very ugly win. I didn't talk about it much tonight, but I'm happy. My team won. It feels weird to say right now that out of all the teams that the Patriots are the one team who have a record of 5-3, and that you have a 5-if that Big Rat team's 5-3, Matt 6-2, and I'm the one who's under 500. Times are weird. We're in a weird year, though. But anyway, guys, thank you very much for listening. Enjoy Week 9. I'll see you back for Week 10. But as for these two guys, they'll be back very soon, and that is a promise you can take to the bank. Good night for now.
Bye, everyone.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent Podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.